I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Wellness Reimagined Committee of the Senior Citizen Advisory Council. And Crystal Miles, you will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Yes, I will. Do we have a picture of a flare? Desiree is on it. If you will all please rise, place your right hand over your heart. Hold on, we're getting the flag. I think we are. Maybe not. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States of America
and to the Republic which stands
one nation and a God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice and for all.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Meredith, would you call roll?
Let me get the right spreadsheet up. Okay, Nicolette Araujo.
I believe she's coming in now. I'm sorry, she was in the attendee room, but I'm moving her over now.
Oh, thank you. So I'll put her as present. Okay, Linda Cardoza. Jerry Chang.
Present.
Meredith Chalimi, I'm present. Susan Doback. Sherry Geyer. Margaret Wong. Elizabeth Jimenez. Susan Langley. Carrie Keene. Crystal Miles.
Present.
Patty Mouton.
Present.
Anne Moudry.
Present.
Joni Nichols. Phil Orlin. Barbara Sloat.
Present.
Amina St. Matthews.
Present.
Dave Sullivan.
Present.
Wonderful. We do have a quorum.
Thank you. Okay. Item four, action items, AB 361 review and make findings required by government code subsection 54953E3. Recommendation, continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of emergency arising from COVID-19. Meeting in person presents imminent risks to the health and safety of attendees, and the emergency continues to impact the ability of the members to meet safely in person. Do I have somebody a motion? Do we have to have a motion for that?
So moved.
Yes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, Dave. Okay. And roll call on that.
Nicolette Araujo.
Here. Or agree. Sorry.
Linda Cardoza. Jerry Chang.
Yes.
Meredith Chalemi.
Yes.
Susan Doback. Sherry Geyer. Margaret Huang. Elizabeth Jimenez. Susan Langley. Carrie Keene. Crystal Miles.
No.
Patty Mouton.
Yes.
Anne Moudry. I think you're muted, Anne.
Agree.
Thank you. Joni Nichols.
Joni, you're muted.
Yes, sorry. My bandwidth is really low, so fine. You keep freezing.
Sorry, what was your vote? I didn't catch the vote. I'm sorry, Joni. Okay, thank you. Phil Orland. Barbara Sloat.
Yes.
Amina Sen Matthews.
Yes.
Dave Sullivan.
Yes.
And that is majority chair.
Thank you. Do we have any guests with us today? Apparently not. Okay. Now I would like to introduce, she really needs no introduction, but would like to introduce Patty Mouton, who will give our presentation on the importance of advanced care planning for everyone over 18 years old. Patty, it's all yours.
Thank you so much. And let's see, I want to, wanted to have my picture up. I can't figure out why. Start video, there we go. There, so you can see me talking. I have called this presentation several things along the way. I've named it, Are You Good to Go? Which got a little bit of a chuckle. And lately I've been calling it, You Won't Always Get What You Want. And that's because we think we have told our families and our friends what we would want to happen when we become seriously ill or when we pass away. And what we don't realize is they may not remember, they may not agree, and it's not binding unless it's in writing. So we're going to talk a little bit about advance directives, a little bit about the POLST document and for whom that might be appropriate. And I'd be happy to take questions as we go. And I will kind of zip through some of this because I know we don't have, 2 hours to talk about it, which we could take if we had a lot of active discussion. But I don't mind questions as we go. Just by way of background, so that you know that this is an area of real interest, passion, and expertise for me, I do serve as Vice President for Outreach and Advocacy for Alzheimer's Orange County. I'm also the Program Director for the Hoag Hospital Palliative Care Department's Community Education Arm. I have a graduate certificate in Palliative Care Chaplaincy. And I am what's called a clinical POLST instructor, which means I've had significant, about 40 hours of training on how to have a POLST conversation for people with serious or terminal illness. I'm not a nurse or a social worker, and I'm not a lawyer or a doctor, so I'm not going to give you legal or medical advice. But I have been doing this kind of work for about 20 years. So, what's our mission? Well, as part of what I do with Hoag, with Alzheimer's Orange County, and I'm also connected to the Diocese of Orange, we know we are called to be with people who are sick and suffering. And most of the time, the people who are sick and suffering are the ones that absolutely need to get their advanced healthcare directives and their POLST documents in order. But truly, everyone over the age of 18 should have a completed advanced healthcare directive. And now, why is that? Well, for those of you that have college-age children, if they were shacking up with somebody that they met a whole 6 weeks ago and they were madly in love, and there were to be some catastrophic accident for which your 20-year-old child was rushed to the hospital, if that partner of all of 6 weeks shows up and says, I'm their significant other, then guess who gets to start making medical decisions for that 20-year-old of yours? That partner. Unless there is an advanced healthcare directive where your kids have named you as their medical decision makers. So I don't know about you, but I raised a whole bunch of teenagers. And most of the people they were hanging out with when they were 21 or 22 or even 25, I wouldn't want making life and death decisions for them. So talk to your kids, have a family night, and don't serve the pie and coffee until they've signed their advanced healthcare directive. If you want the forms, I will give them to you. And we use a document called Five Wishes, which I'll show you shortly, that really makes it very conversational and easy to begin this dialogue, which isn't always easy to start. Every seriously ill person, we believe, should get the medical treatments that are in alignment, congruent with their personal goals, their values, and their priorities. How do we know what your values and priorities are if you don't tell us or if we don't ask? During COVID, we learned a lot. And one of the most important things we learned is you better be prepared because serious illness can hit you like a ton of bricks when you least expect it. People have lost loved ones totally out of the blue, and people's conditions can change so quickly. So you really want to be prepared, and you don't want to wait for a crisis to get your paperwork and your emotional ducks in order. Because sometimes this requires some emotional review. And sometimes there are some rough patches between family members that you need to iron out. We typically plan for everything. We have checklists for wedding showers and baby showers. We have checklists for the supermarket. I have checklists for my checklists so that I know if I have to be someplace, I've got all the things I need in my car and I've notified everybody and I've sent the emails. So we are planners, especially in Orange County, because we're doers and movers and shakers. People are not planning for serious illness and for end of life. And I'm going to tell you, as many people as I have walked the journey of end of life with, and it's a lot, it's in the hundreds. It's the one thing we all share. Nobody gets off this planet alive unless you're an astronaut. And people don't want to face it. They put it off and put it off and put it off. And it's the one thing that's inevitable. A wise person once told me, we are built for planned obsolescence. So at some point, our body is going to stop. And unless we are prepared with what people should do in that eventuality, they get really crazy. People don't know what to do. People argue about the smallest things. Never mind, do you want burial or cremation? Never mind, do you want to be kept on a ventilator for 6 or 8 weeks or months? So it's really important that these conversations happen way upstream when everybody's pretty healthy and when there's no trauma or stress that's present in the room. We all say, oh, I'm healthy. Oh, my family will know what to do. They won't. My doctor will tell me when it's time. He or she won't. It's the last thing they want to talk about because death to most physicians is considered a failure. They're raised up as doctors to try and cure everybody and keep them alive. And sometimes they can't. And it's very difficult for them to raise this issue and to have these kinds of conversations. We have to nudge them. I don't want to think about it. Well, you know what? I don't want to think about it either. But about 3 weeks ago, I did a terrible, terrible, catastrophic, rough and tumble fall over a curb in a parking lot. And boy, did my life flash before me. And boy, was I glad I had my paperwork in order. And, you know, when I came out of the stunned moment of the accident, I was okay. I was banged up, but I wasn't truly, you know, terribly injured. But my life did flash before my eyes because I could have hit my head on that curb and had a traumatic brain injury. I could have, you know, really nuked myself. So it can happen when you least expect it. Some people say, I don't know where to begin. Well, that's okay. This is why we're talking. We're going to give you some tools about how to start, and I will give you the actual instruments so that if you don't know where to start, now you'll have at least a place to begin the conversation. We want you to be prepared because 50% of us are not able to make any decisions in a healthcare crisis. That's pretty high. When I took that fall and I was dazed and confused and in terrible pain, bleeding from my lip, I couldn't have made any really good decisions. And I wasn't even terribly injured. So imagine if you're in a bad car accident, or if you have a stroke, or if you have a heart attack, or if you have some terrible catastrophe, 50% of us cannot participate in our healthcare decisions in that crisis. And we don't want to wait until the life flight helicopter is arriving. I'm going to say this about 20 times. Everyone over the age of 18 should have an advanced healthcare directive. Say again.
My wife is okay. And I told her this is really good. I want her to watch this too.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. And patients want to talk to their doctors about it. If you think about it, if you were seriously ill, you'd want to talk to your doctor about it. Of course you would. Almost 50% say definitely, and 79% say yes, probably. I would want to talk to my doctor about it if I were seriously ill. But we don't think about this ahead of time. So we would want to talk to the doctor about what levels of care we consider acceptable. Lots of people say, well, I don't want heroic or extraordinary measures. What does that mean? If someone were to say to you, do you want heroic measures if you were seriously ill? How would you answer it? What does that mean to you? Is it ventilator? Is it feeding tube? Is it CPR? What is it to you? These are the things we need to talk about. And at what point would you consider certain treatments a burden or a benefit? That's a personal decision. And you'd want to talk to the physicians about, okay, yes, it's terrible to have mom on this mechanical ventilation with tubes coming out of every orifice and beeps and alarms and, you know, just, you know, really a very intrusive interventions all the time. But at what point does that treatment become a burden, or is it still a benefit? That's a very personal decision. And for many people, it depends upon what is the outcome going to be. Is she going to get well if we keep her on the ventilator for 3 weeks?
Right,
maybe. That's going to be on a case-by-case, patient-determined basis. And does your family know what you think about this? You would be shocked if you got everybody around the dining room table and you said, what do you think I would want if I were comatose and couldn't make decisions? If you had seven people around the table, you're going to get nine different answers because they're going to waffle and they're going to hear what somebody else says and says, oh yeah, mom would want that. They don't know unless you have told them. And it's not actionable unless you put it in writing in the right legal instruments. Now, here's a big one. Who speaks for you if you can't speak for yourself? You don't have to tell me right now, but I'll tell you what happens in my family. Some of you know my Roger Mouton, probably the nicest man on the planet, loves me, and some days I can't figure out why. And we've been married 35 years almost. He is not my agent on my healthcare directive. Oh, that might raise some eyebrows. The reason is he's got a heart of gold and marshmallow. And if I were terribly sick on a ventilator, comatose, very little hope for my survival or ever coming back to functionality. He would sit by my bedside every day, all day, probably sleep on a cot next to me, holding my hand. And if I had a myoclonic jerk from being in the coma, he'd say, oh my gosh, she squeezed my hand. She's coming back. She's going to be all right. He could never, ever say to the doctors, that's enough. Let her go. My daughter, on the other hand, is an advanced practice nurse. And many people have heard this before. She's not one of those nice, warm, fuzzy nurses. She's the kind that says, hold still or it's going to hurt. And she means it. She's a darling daughter. We're very close. She understands all the clinical information. And as hard as it might be, she could follow my wishes if I were in some sort of catastrophic situation. So my daughter, Molly, is my agent on my healthcare directive. Think about whom you would choose. Could they follow your instructions? Would they be strong enough to withstand what the family pushback might be? Would they understand what the doctors are saying? So choose wisely. Only 7% of patients surveyed report that they have spoken with their doctor about their end-of-life care wishes. I think that's just amazingly bad. We should all go into our doctors, and as part of your Medicare annual wellness visit, you are entitled to time with your doctor to talk about these things. They can bill for it. So when you make your next appointment, say, I want the annual wellness visit because I want to talk about my end of life care. And then they will allow time. And it's no skin off your doctor's nose. They bill for it and they get paid well. It's the annual wellness visit in Medicare, but you have to ask for it. They won't offer it. All right. So this is a process. It's designed to respect the dignity of every single patient and to give people the opportunity to make choices for themselves, to designate someone as a surrogate decision maker, someone that they choose, and really ensure that there is free will and informed consent, so that you don't end up with having medical procedures that you wouldn't have wanted. And it's a way to assist each person or their surrogate to have appropriate access to medical information. If someone is your decision maker and they really don't know the status that you're in, they don't know your prognosis, they don't know the extent to which your brain might be injured or you might be ill, the advancement of your disease. If they don't have access to that information, how can they make an informed decision for you? Excuse me. And this does not present any options for assisted suicide or euthanasia. That's not what advanced care planning is about. The advance directive is a written legal document, usually as part of a form, and there are many forms legal in California. I will give you the five wishes document, which is legal here. It's intended for everyone over 18, and it's a way to document your wishes in the event you are unable to communicate. And the most important job of the advance directive is to assign your surrogate decision maker. The advance directives are for advance care, not for care today. In the event you can't speak for yourself, and they only attach if you can't speak for yourself. So your surrogate decision maker can't come in and start making decisions for you if you have full capacity. If you're still communicating, you make decisions. They are a communication tool. so that the person speaking for you can understand your values and then clarify your preferences for healthcare in serious and potentially life-limiting conditions. They're not a prescription, they're not a plan of care, and they are not do not resuscitate orders. And this is really important. You can put, I don't want CPR in your advanced directive, but that's not legally binding. There's another form called a POLST that is the one to use if you really never, ever want CPR. And we're going to talk about the difference. You can indicate that you would not want to be resuscitated, but it's not legally binding. And if the paramedics show up and you're in cardiac arrest and all you have is the advanced directive, they still must attempt CPR. So there are some really important fine points. We want you to think, we want you to talk, we want you to make choices, and then we want you to act. So think about what your priorities are in the event that you were seriously ill or had a life-limiting condition or you were in a serious catastrophic accident. What are your priorities? Think about your own faith tradition and maybe ask your pastor or your rabbi or your imam, what is the right path for someone of my tradition? Because you might be surprised what they say. Talk to your loved ones, talk to your healthcare providers. In the event you do nothing and do not fill out any paperwork, at least if you've had a serious conversation, then they might be at least well-informed enough to get close to what your wishes are. But many families are faced with terrible, terrible decisions, and they feel horrible guilt because they don't know whether or not they did the right thing. So give them that gift of telling them and then making it actionable in writing. Choose your healthcare proxy very carefully. And don't have people be co-agents. You can have one be the first one, and if that person is incapacitated, dead, or we can't reach him on the other side of the globe, then the second person could make the decisions. Don't have people have to make decisions together, because I will tell you from experience, they will not agree. And it will cause rough edges between family members. So don't do that. Choose one. And then if they are not available for whatever reason, then there's a second in command. And then complete your advanced directive. In order for it to be legal, you have to have witnesses. Having it notarized is the best, but it's not mandatory. But you can't have people witness who are working in your doctor's office, working in the assisted living where you are, part of the hospital, nobody who is connected to your healthcare in any way, shape, or form can be a witness. Nobody who's connected with your assisted living community can be a witness. And the witness cannot be the agent named in the advance directive. It's also really smart if they're not related to you by blood, and if they're not going to inherit anything from you. We want to remove any hint of conflict of interest. So if you're leaving your entire estate to your niece, don't have her witness your advanced healthcare directive. Get somebody else to do it. And if possible, have a notary. Did you have a question, Nicolette?
Thank you. I actually had a comment. I will tell you, as you were talking about the choices that you've made as far as someone who's going to speak for you, it really is also important to consider someone who's going to stick by their guns. Unfortunately, I had a situation at Stanford Hospital where my uncle, who had an advance directive, who had it on file at Stanford Hospital, was put into neuro ICU after a massive brain bleed, even though his advance directive clearly stated that was not what he wanted. And it took my going up there and advocating for him, getting him moved to a medical unit, getting him the morphine that he had specifically outlined in his advance directive that he wanted no pain, and the EKG was showing that he was having pain. So really make sure that this is someone who really can stand up, really advocate for your health and well-being. Not saying it'll necessarily happen to you, but you really do want an individual who understands and preferably understands the process very clearly.
Indeed. Understands the clinical information that's being shared, understands what your wishes are, and then can do pushback if that's what's necessary. Now, a little help. This document has been legal in California for about 10 years. It's called a POLST. It stands for Physician Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. It's not for everybody. It's really only for those who have a serious chronic illness or very advanced age. So it's for people who really are contemplating their terminality. But it is a legal document, a medical legal order that the paramedics must follow, that emergency department staff must follow. It has the seal from California Emergency Medical Services, and it is considered a medical legal order. It must be signed by a physician, nurse practitioner, or physician assistant, as well as the patient or their legally recognized healthcare decision maker in order for it to be actionable. Otherwise, it's just a wish. But once it is fully executed, then it becomes an order that people have to follow. And so what do we do with this document? Let me move this. So this is for whom this is appropriate. Would you be surprised if this patient died within the next year? If you say, no, I wouldn't be surprised, then they're appropriate for a POLST document. I'll tell you the story of my own mother. She was 97 years old. She was actually in really good health and spirits, completely cognitively intact until 9 days before she died. She had a POLST because she was 97. And nobody would have been surprised if she didn't quite make it to 98. She didn't, God love her, but she didn't have any particular illnesses that would have pointed to end of life. But 97 has already been way past our life expectancy. So you see what the balance is. If somebody has a serious chronic illness or very advanced age, and no one would be surprised if they died within the next year, then a POLST is likely to be appropriate. So it requires signature from both sides, from a healthcare professional and the patient or legal decision maker. And it's a document that requires a conversation, because we're going to have some very specific orders in the POLST. And we may not have time to go through every chapter and verse and line on the POLST today, but basically, it allows people to choose whether or not they want us to attempt CPR. If they're in cardiac arrest, if I'm in cardiac arrest and I have stage 4 lung cancer, I don't want CPR because it's not pretty and it's not elegant and it's painful and it's traumatic. And likely all of my ribs would be broken. I'd be in excruciating pain, and the probability of me coming back, even if they could get my heart started, the probability of me coming back to my level of functionality prior to the cardiac arrest is extremely low. I'm over 65 now, so it would be like less than 10% chance of me coming back, even if they got my heart started. Okay. Ventilator. Well, you know what? There might be times that a ventilator is very appropriate. But if I can't breathe on my own because I have advanced Alzheimer's disease and I've been ill with it for 10 years and now I'm 92 years old and my brain has forgotten how to tell me to breathe and have my heart beat, don't keep me on a ventilator just to keep me breathing. Allow Mother Nature to decide. And if I can no longer breathe on my own, my choice is to allow natural death. And we put people through excruciating interventions. This is important for all of us who are advocates for older adults. More than 25% of the total Medicare budget, so billions of dollars, is spent on patients during the last 6 weeks of life for care that most would say they don't want, and more importantly, doesn't change the outcome. These people still die, but they die hooked up to every machine and intervention. And most people say, I want to die at home. I want my little dog on the foot of the bed. I'd like a couple grandchildren around me. And I'd like to have my spouse, you know, patting my head as I go. No one says, I want to be in the ICU. I want a tube anywhere they can place one. I want to be poked and I want alarms going off. Nobody says that. But unless you have these documents in place, and you've talked to your family and you've talked to your doctor, that's what you get. And I think we have to let that sink in a little bit. Antibiotics, IV hydration and nutrition. I'm going to tell you, particularly in end-stage dementia, artificial hydration and nutrition does not help. It does not prolong life, and there are about 40 academic studies that prove that, and it causes problems. People get overloaded with fluid and they get what's called ascites. So their abdomen swells up and it's very painful. They have a fluid volume overload. So it makes their kidneys shut down faster. It's not helpful. And when the body is trying to moment by moment, let go of this life, sometimes when we intervene, we cause more problems than we seek to solve. You can also say on the pulse that you want a trial period. So let's say you can't eat or you can't breathe on your own because there's been some sort of accident after surgery. Well, maybe you want to try the ventilator for 30 days. And let's see, because maybe that gives your body enough time to reset. Okay. And maybe you can breathe on your own. So you have the opportunity to create some customized trial periods here. The pulse is never mandatory. So if you're going into a skilled nursing facility after surgery for a knee replacement and you're in otherwise good health and they give you a pulse, say, no, I do not have to fill this out. It is, there's a wide variety of compliance, especially in skilled nursing facilities. And mostly it's because the staff are not well-trained. But you are not required ever to complete a pulsed document. So it complements the Advanced Healthcare Directive. They're both important legal documents. They just have different jobs. The POST does not replace your advanced directive, and it must be followed by physicians and emergency personnel if it is appropriately executed and signed. And I'm going to kind of zip through these sections, and I'd be happy to go through this individually. If anybody wants information about a POST, I'll meet you and we'll have coffee or lunch and we'll go through it. It's pretty specific about what kind of treatment you want. And it's it makes really good sense, because if we're going to attempt resuscitation with CPR, then we want to take care of you. Then we want to do full advanced cardiac life support. We're not going to just get your heart started and then leave you on the gurney. We're going to do whatever is possible. But it can be a little confusing. And that's why it takes someone who has very specific training to have a pulse conversation with a patient and family. So generally, it's healthcare providers who are licensed, certified, or otherwise authorized. So these are the folks that should have that kind of conversation. A physician, nurses who are trained, not every nurse is trained, nurse practitioners and physician assistants who are trained in the pulse document. Many social workers are trained, many hospital chaplains, and some social service designees, but very few. So once it's completed, it stays with you. It's one of those things that should be magneted onto your refrigerator, because that's where the paramedics are trained to look if they get a call to come into your home. But you want to make copies of everything. So if you fill out a pulse, if you complete your advanced directive, make copies and give them to everybody important in your life, not just your lawyer. And don't have it locked up in your lawyer's office. Don't have it locked up in your fiduciary's office. And don't put it in your safe deposit box. You can have a copy in there, but you need to have these documents readily available. And you want all your kids to have a copy, your next door neighbors, because they might be the ones who call the paramedics and follow you to the hospital. And you want them to know who your decision maker is. So be practical. This is important as well. In California, there is no hierarchy of surrogate decision maker. So your oldest son does not automatically get to make decisions for you if you haven't outlined this in an advanced healthcare directive. So it's really important, because sometimes your closest available relative may be the nosy cousin that you don't want making decisions for you. And guess who the medical staff are going to listen to at the emergency department? The one who shows up and makes the most noise, unless you have this paperwork. You can take your advance directive and your pulse document over to the hospital where you're likely to be brought, and they can put it into your electronic medical record. So be thorough. So in summary, the advance directive is for anyone over 18. The pulse is for people who are seriously ill or at advanced age. The advance directive is general instructions for future treatment. The pulse is specific orders actionable today. The advance directive's primary job is to name your decision maker. Your pulse could be signed by your decision maker. And every 3, 4, 5 years, you should review all these documents. Maybe fill out new ones if necessary, but make sure you don't have somebody listed who has predeceased you or moved out of the area, so they'd be very difficult to reach. So review your documents whenever there's a major life event, a death in the family, a divorce, you've moved to a new house, but at least every 5 years. And I think we have a few moments for questions. If anybody has a question, how are we doing on time, Barbara?
Maybe 3 minutes.
Okay. All right. So if anybody has a question, I'll be happy to help you. All right.
We have, I'm just looking at our chat. Joni Nichols checked hers and she did the 5 wishes, but she also recommended, and I recommend this too, Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. Dr. Yes. Atul Gawande as a really, really good book to cover
you
that.
You know, I just had a brain spark. About 5 or 6 years ago, we had a whole campaign where we screened the movie Being Mortal probably 100 times in the community. And I'd be happy to do that again for the SCAC at a special kind of event.
Oh,
so we can talk about that offline and bring a panel of experts, a palliative care doctor, a chaplain, a lawyer. So if you'd like to do that, we can arrange that as a special event.
Great. Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So that's a note to Elaine.
Patty, okay. You did such a great job that I don't have any questions, but I did learn a lot. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I also learned something that I have a pulsed directive, but it's not on my refrigerator. I guess I better move it.
I have a copy. Honest to goodness, paramedics look at what's magneted onto the refrigerator for important information. Mm-hmm. So that it helps them out.
Right. Can I just comment on that really quick? So this is Marco from the Office on Aging. We at the Office on Aging do have what you're talking about, Patty, which it's called the File of Lifes. Mm-hmm. They're like a red. So we do distribute those out of this office because we are, first of all, they cost us money and the state actually checks on how many we're providing. We ask that people call our office to get them. So it's on an individual basis. Unless we do like a presentation for somebody, we can do File of Life presentations where we go through the whole File of Life, what it is, and then we kind of help them fill it out while they're there. But we do have to like know everybody's name and we put it in our database. So I just wanted to throw that out there. We also do have the Advanced Healthcare Directive booklets that we can provide to the community as well. And that's both of those they can access by calling our call center.
I also had Patty, Carrie, who is on vacation, wondered if your presentation could be available to us or for her to get online.
Sure. Did you record it?
Yeah,
I believe it's recorded. I don't mind you sharing this. And also, if you go to our website at Alzheimer's Orange County, there are some formal presentations on advanced care planning and POLST that are on our YouTube channel, but absolutely.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, Patty, thank you. That was, Joni.
Oh, Joni.
Excellent.
You're not muted, Joni, so you can,
Not hearing.
We can't hear you.
Maybe you can.
Okay, now you can hear me on my phone, correct?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I've had way too much opportunity to be the advanced directive person. And I would add one additional suggestion. We no longer have a metallic refrigerator. But what we do is we have an envelope in each of our cars and we keep it in the glove compartment. We also have a note at the back door. 2 years ago, I was out of the country. My husband needed help, and I could direct the emergency medical people to where the envelope was that had that information. It also lists every one of his doctor caregivers, every medicine he's currently on, and
that's
any major health incidents he's had in the last 5 years. So, and I also would point out that the decision-making varies greatly, as Nicolette pointed out, but also by the age of the person. When I had to make these decisions for my husband, who's in the next room and living, when he was 40 and on life support for 3 weeks, it was quite different than when I made those decisions for my father at 98, and we had gone over the 5 wishes together from his bed. And I'd also like to point out and just emphasize what Patty said about not doing more than one person to decide, because when siblings, even who grew up in the same household, have very different ideas about what to do, And my children know that in my particular case, that no one in my family is going to pull the cord on me. It's my college roommate, because she's got the balls to do it. So, and they know her, and they've built a relationship with her, and they know I see her regularly, and we discuss this subject. Because if it's somebody who says, I'd really rather not talk about it, that's not the person you want to make the decision. I want someone who we can read Being Mortal together and discuss it, and we can talk about the problems of the healthcare system. So that's my 10 cents.
Very smart.
Great. Okay, well, I think at this point we have to move on. Thank you, Patty, so much for wonderful presentation and bringing up more questions that we need to find answers for. So, okay, now I, I have on the agenda, as old business, the SCAC priorities to the Board of Supervisors that was part of, what did we have? Number two was caregiver support, and then number four, professional careers and aging. And anybody have any comments from the committee on what? I'm new to this, and I keep saying I come from private industry, and it's very different than public and government. So I was wondering if anybody had any comments about the decisions that were made and that were being sent to the board, presented to the board from SCAC.
Well, this is Meredith speaking. I would say that what I learned based on our last discussion at the general SCAC meeting is that going forward for next year's recommendations, we need to be even more careful about what the county has to do versus what the state has to do. We learned that a lot of our recommendations are more county advocacy to the state for state funding to come back to Orange County, but not something that SCAC is going to recommend that the Board of Supervisors supplements. So I think we have to all put our thinking caps on about that reality and then how to navigate that with what we want to discuss and think about recommending for next year.
I second that, Meredith. And what I was surprised about is that even though the county supervisors could use county funds for some of the things we recommended, they would be reluctant to do so because the state might then say, oh, you have enough money, we're not going to give you this state money. So it isn't that they couldn't use county funding, it's that they don't want to because they don't want a watchdog at the state to say, oh, we're not going to give you any more money in that area. So it becomes not so much whether or not it's a good idea, well thought out, well budgeted, it's a question of making sure that state or federal funding doesn't disappear as a result.
Yeah.
Agree. So I'm wondering if we should focus on things like public awareness in Orange County. I'm not sure how we go, but I think that we learned a lot during the process. And then we also learned a lot at the end of the process. And so we need to be careful.
and I also through that whole process thought that we have to be more cognizant of everyone's time that they're putting into putting together that presentation, that we're all involved in a lot of things and we're willing to do it, but I would like it to be a good use of our time so that, well, maybe I'm just looking for better results. I don't know. So anyway, but I just wanted to get, thank you, Meredith and Patty, for commenting about that and well said, both things, both of you. So let's see, next thing is announcements. Anybody have any announcements? Patty?
Okay. The Walk for Alzheimer's is this Saturday at Angel Stadium. starts, the festivities start around 8 a.m. There'll be food trucks, coffee. You can come and see me at my exhibit table because I will have fresh Starbucks and really good donuts. I'd like to invite all of you to come register, and that's for insurance purposes. But also, you know, if you're so inclined, donate the cost of lunch. A little bit goes a long way, and we're celebrating 40 years of serving Orange County. Every nickel that we raise here stays right here in our community to benefit your neighbors and friends.
Awesome. Addie, let me add on to that. I'm going to put a plug in for our booth as well, because we aren't going to have coffee and donuts, but our booth is a walk down memory lane, and we're going to have the old fashioned bazooka bubble gum. Do y'all remember bazooka bubble gum from the
That's a workout.
And we are going to have a 50s photo booth, and we're offering a grand prize to registrants of a family portrait sitting to help continue to create those memories with your elder loved ones.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So join us. It's Anaheim Stadium. Come along around 8 o'clock. You can email me, or if you're my Facebook friend, I'm posting the registration and donation links. It's easy, it's fun, and it's a great cause.
Yeah.
I have one comment.
Okay, Dave.
Yeah, I have to say, I've been at this a long time on SCAC, and Patty, that was the best presentation ever. Thank you so much.
Thank you. My goodness, that's high praise. Thank you, Dr. Sullivan.
Okay. At any public matters, at this time, members of the public may address the council regarding any items within the subject jurisdiction, provided that no action is taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Anybody have any other comments to make?
Chair, we did not receive any public comments via email, but there are members of the public present. If there are members of the public who'd like to speak during public comment, please use the hand raise icon or press *9 and I will unmute you. I'm not seeing any hands raised, Chair.
Okay.
Oh, Anne has a question or a comment.
Okay.
I'm probably out of order, but May is mental health month, and I'd be honored to speak page and a half of different mental health issues.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, and I have scheduled for May from Be Well Orange County, the mobile mental health crisis response team. And the speaker will be Natalie Besnashian, who's the homeless coordinator for Newport Beach. So I had contacted her about with questions about older adult homelessness. And so we started with that. And then she told me that Newport Beach is now part of this Be Well, and we have a mobile mental health crisis response team and vehicle. And she's going to speak about that in May. So are you okay with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Great. Okay. If there are no further comments, I shall adjourn the meeting. Our next meeting will be April 20th, 2022 at 1 p.m. And thank you all for your attendance today. Great seeing all of you.
Bye. Have a good day. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.